Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Last Lap Podcast. Hope we're all doing well. We are back here after the Miami Grand Prix. We've had all the action, all the excitement. Mostly just off the track, to be honest with you, of the Miami Grand Prix. I'm joined, obviously, by my boy, Tomo. How you doing, boss?
Your boy. And it might not be evening. Don't be so presumptuous.
Facts. Yeah, no, you know what? I should be catering to all days, all hours of the day.
Every single hour.
Dusk dawn.
It's a pleasure to be here at 10:31 p.m.
So it is the evening.
For us right now.
Yeah, fair enough.
If you're listening audio only, just in your ears, then thank you. Give us a 5-star, even though you don't know how good this podcast is going to be. Blind support. I appreciate that.
I love that.
If you're watching anywhere else, then say hello.
Yeah. Like and subscribe. All that jazz on YouTube. We are joined by some sensational guests.
Should we introduce them?
We had from the show as well. We've got the boy himself.
The boy.
We've got Matt.
Morning,
Ames,
everyone.
In the place. Morning.
Yeah, you went evening.
Fair enough. We've got Ben as well. How you doing, bro?
Yeah, good. Thanks.
Good stuff. Good stuff. We've been treated to like an okay-ish Grand Prix, man.
Well, we all kind of 5, 6 out of 10. We all kind of gave
That's sensational for the season. Yeah. That's the thing.
Yeah. I mean, compared to Baku, this was an absolute barnstorm. Like, it was fun. I mean, look, there were overtakes consistently. We didn't really get that fight at the front. Without the fight at the front, you can't really give it more than a 6. I think that's what you need, right?
100%. Yeah. No, I mean, like, exactly. I mean, most people tune into F1, you know, basically to watch, you know, well, they want to see a competitive fight for the win. And, you know, if that's lacking, then obviously it's not necessarily entertaining. It depends obviously who you support. I mean, you know, certain teams aren't doing very well at the moment, so for those are you know, it's a bit tough. But
McLaren
not to name any names, but yeah, you know, honestly, like, in terms of like the field overall, I guess, you know, there's some good racing here and there, but I mean, what year didn't we ever have that? I mean, like, in terms of the new regulations, they're kind of marketed in a way that would assume, or like, you know, you would assume that there would be, you know, a bit more competition towards the front end of the grid. Mm. And there has been a bit of conversion, you know, don't get me wrong. It's not like the field hasn't converged, but it's like, you know, there's still single team domination. It's not like that's been completely eradicated. Mm. So, yeah.
When you've got a single team dominating, which has happened many a time, like, this is not new.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What you want is that multi-team, like that inter-team battle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's what we've been hoping for from a neutral point of view. You want to see that fight. You want to see a fight. If you're not going to see a multi-team fight, you want to see a multi-driver fight. And I think we saw today that, you know, Max is able to, you know, on his day, Max in that car, I don't think anyone can touch Max.
No.
When he's on his day, when he's on his job. And today from P9... to P2 in what, 15 laps?
It's just so simple, man. Yeah. On the hards.
He makes it look easy as well.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, for him, it is, yeah.
Double overtake was just so smart.
Yeah, the way he positioned himself.
But even then, just the way he, you know, managed that first stint, I mean, I assumed that Checo was managing that first stint and he was trying to extend. They said like +5, he had graining on the front left. And then as the race went on, it was just like Verstappen was just pumping in the lap times on the consistently on the hards. Yeah. Came in with like 11 laps to go, breezed past him. Like, it was not, like, that's not normal.
No.
Like, these are the best drivers in the world, and he's just like making them look like they're Amateur.
He was doing
also saying this as if we're surprised at like, oh, this is like now my first happening. Like, I mean, he's been showing this for so long now. He's been so consistent. And it's, yeah, true testament that, yeah, not only have Red Bull created a great car, but then, yeah, Max Verstappen is just pretty much getting the most out of it. And I don't think there is much of the conversation anymore that, you know, Red Bull are building a car around Verstappen. Because I don't think, I mean, obviously they'll cater to it as much as they can do. But it just kind of just goes with this race, at least, that, yeah, if you've got a driver coming up all the way through the grid and then going past your second, your teammate, it's, yeah, for me, it's just different leagues. And I feel like the regulations, they're just not really, like, they still haven't properly come into a head yet. Like, yeah, some of the midfield is now bunched up together, which is good on the timesheet, but then it's not really, like, advocating more overtakes, which is kind of the whole reason that you were be able to closer fight, follow and fight.
Well, drivers are they're complaining about dirty air again.
Yeah.
And saying, like, I mean, Carlos Sainz after Jeddah, I think it was, basically the same as, like before again.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're still having to come out of the slipstream just to try and cool your car down.
Yeah.
And then prompts you not to...
I still think it's better... I don't know if, like, Carlos was just speaking out of tone or so. I think it's still a lot better than it was in, like, 2021. I mean, you look at how intricate the barge boards were in those cars. Mm. I mean, fucking dirty air must have been insane. Yeah, like, was insane.
Even the winglets on the front wing, like,
yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So I still relative to last year, I think it has got more complicated. You look at the intricacies on these front wings now. Like, I get that, but I just think that it's a balance, isn't it? Because you look at how, say, slowest car last year, say the Williams AlphaTauri, right, how they've closed up relative to Mercedes, Ferrari, two teams who have been at the front consistently for the last kind of 10 years fighting towards the front. That gap between the worst car and those teams has closed significantly, I think, with these new regulations. And it's a question of, it's that whole balance, isn't it? Red Bull have smashed it. They've done a great job. They've produced a fantastic racing car. Yes, they overspent last year by £400,000, £500,000, whatever it was, which is not enough to build this much performance into your car. Reality is they've done a great job with the resources they've got. I just think you need to give credit where credit's due, and you need to give these regulations more time. And it's now on the other teams to catch up. It's their responsibility to catch up.
I think that's the main thing. That you, like you were saying, sorry to interrupt you, it was about the, yeah, it's just time, basically, that we are wanting to expect to see results straight away.
We're 1 year and five races into
nowhere near that.
And we did say during the race as well, like, ultimately, Mercedes and Ferrari have taken a massive step backwards.
Yeah.
If we're being totally honest, like, we can't, whilst, yes, the regulations could definitely make more of an impact than they have so far, we can't ignore the fact that Mercedes and Ferrari have scored a massive.
Can't ignore the fact that Aston Martin have jumped them both.
Yeah, legit,
nowhere.
Yeah,
exactly. And I think it comes back to understanding exactly why that's happening, because Red Bull, you know, they started off with the best, I think, base car from 2022. Like, the RB18 were generally, I mean, it started overweight, but in general, I think they prioritize, like, aerodynamic efficiency rather than, you know, trying to be at the weight limit. If you look at Alfa Romeo, they started the 2022 at the weight limit.
They were the only car as well.
Exactly. And now they're not necessarily, I mean, they're there or thereabouts, but it's kind of like other teams have jumped them because they had a better car concept from the get-go, and their philosophy was, you know, there was more, the performance ceiling for their, you know, car concept was a lot higher than, say, you know, like the Mercedes, for example. Like, I think for a team like Mercedes, they should have realized already, like, that it was basically not going to go anywhere, I think. And, you know, now at least they've accepted that reality, and, you know, they're moving in a different direction. But I think even for a team like Ferrari, I remember Fred Vasseur saying also if you're constantly, you know, trying to play catch up, right, and you're constantly looking at, okay, this is what Red Bull have, this is what we don't have, how can we bridge that gap? If you've already chosen a car concept, and decide to switch to a new one, you're always going to be like, you know, they're always going to be out developing you in theory, unless you, you know, build, you try and like copy like Aston Martin did.
Yeah, and I think that's clear what like Mercedes have tried to do, have tried to be innovators and co with this no sidepod design. But unfortunately, it's one of those few times where if you are gambling and not looking at what your competitors are doing,
exactly,
then it's just not going to work out for you. And I do wonder when is going to be the switching point for them. I'm assuming they're going to carry on this no sidepod design to the end of the year. Sure. And then we're going to see basically
well, you like can't just like size. Get a new chassis in the cost cap. You can't just
no, exactly
bring a new
that.
Chassis
yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
that because that's such a...
Mm. The sidepods are so fundamental as well.
Yeah.
You can't just go, ah, yeah, just slap someone on the side.
But I don't even think it's just the sidepods, right? Mm. Like
the
even sidepods, even
the visually obvious.
It's the visually yeah. obvious thing. Thing and it's the visually different thing. I mean, you know, Ferrari have different side pods to Red Bull and they're still relatively quick at the start of 2022.
Yeah,
but
on the floor, isn't it?
Yeah, it's on the one, floor and, you know.
And you had like Adrian Newey, he did what he's, didn't he do like his college thesis on like
in ground effect? Ground effect cars, yeah. I mean,
he knows his
every
stuff.
Little helps, but like, yeah. you know, I think also with particularly Mercedes, you know, I think, you know, their development, you know, the way they go about development is very much like by the numbers. Whereas I think Red Bull are a bit more, and especially Newey is a lot more aware of like, how is this going to work practically on track? Because, mm-hmm. you know, remember they started with Paulson and everything and they were like, oh, what is this? They thought they had a world beater. Like, let's not forget, they thought they were going to come and just destroy everyone. And then when it didn't happen, they were all like, oh, like shit, what do we do now? Mm. And so it's an interesting balance, I think, to see. They have been talking about, you know, gains in the wind tunnel, but they did talk about gains in the wind tunnel last year too. So
a lot of teams talk about gains.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, yeah.
Well, true.
There's not round 24,
how it
the
translates.
Wind tunnel.
Yeah, exactly. That. It's so important.
Yeah, because, you know? But you say about copying, Matt, the thing is, if you're copying a team that is going to bring upgrades in like 6 months. Yeah, you said the point about copying, Red Bull copying. I'm sure you mentioned copying.
I think it was Ben.
Ben. Oh, Aston Martin.
No, Red Bull.
Yeah, but you're coming from Ben's point, though.
Yeah.
No, but I was bringing up.
Okay.
I'll start again. Well, whoever's point. The point about copying is that, you know, if you're copying another team that by the time you've actually brought the upgrades, you know, 3-4 months later, they will have... You need to anticipate what they're going to do next. It's not enough to just copy Red Bull. You have to be like, well, what's Adrian got cooking?
Yeah. Exactly. What's he going
to
do next?
What's he got in the cauldron? Because we need to do that. But again, if you've got a different car concept, then copying might not even give you what you want.
Red Bull having that concept from the get-go, they understand it way better than anyone else. I mean, Aston Martin are the only other team who technically they have a general understanding of how the Red Bull concept or what its characteristics and everything. So
that's why I'm really excited to see what their season is going to look like in like two years' time. Mm. Like the fact of where they are at the moment in championship, you know, currently sitting comfortably second in teams with like Fernando Alonso, like getting like podiums, kind of starting to get more consistent. And then they're going to have a brand new factory to work in from the beginning of next year. And then after that year of working around that, seeing where they're going to go as far forward. That's why I'm quite excited actually now see how Aston Martin going to go and do it, because they're going to have all these facilities in-house, a new wind tunnel and everything like that. And if they're already doing great strides in what they're currently working with at the moment, having to work between two different places, I can only imagine now what it's going to be once they're all under like one proper roof.
Well, the thing is, like, Alonso's what, 4 P3s and 1 P4?
P4, yeah.
Mm. In 5 races.
Mad. Consistency.
Crazy consistency. You've also had 3 wins for Max, 2 wins for Checo. So they've taken points off of each other to an extent. Obviously, yeah, 7 between 1 and 2, and then only 3 between 2 and 3. So, yeah, I said at the start of the season, I was like, if I had to choose, who's going to challenge Max? Is it Checo in the same car, or is it another car, particularly Fernando in Aston Martin? Right now, I mean, it's looked really good for Max this race. We've got the ATR that Aston Martin have got plenty up until the end of June, I think it is.
Yes.
If Alonso can keep picking up P3s and the Red Bulls can keep swapping.
Taking points off each other.
Mm. Yeah. Just winning the championship, is that what you're saying?
Like, what's more likely, do we think? Perez to challenge Max or Fernando to challenge?
You know, that's how he almost won in 2012. It wasn't true. There. And he, like, it was, you know, he put in those consistent results.
And
results
people
well.
Taking points off
each exactly.
See, this is the thing. Yeah. It's then kind of asking the question, using the Miami as using Miami as the example of like the gap. Do you think after the wind tunnel reductions coming through and when the upgrades come in, do you think the rest of the field, excluding Red Bull, do you think they will make up that 20 seconds worth in terms of upgrades?
It's so much. It's not just like 5 seconds or like 10 seconds.
That's the thing for me. That's why I'm very hesitant to think, like, I think there will be some upgrades, but I don't think it's going to bridge that gap of 20 seconds or so. And with the argument of like, who's going to be sort of challenging Max, is it going to be Alonso and another team or Perez? I don't think there's going to be any challenge at all. I would love for there to be one from.
Yeah, but if.
Yeah, I know, but I don't think. What if? I don't think Perez
that
was. Yeah, I just don't think Perez has got the. I don't think Perez has got it. Saying, so,
if anyone can take a car and perform it at its ceiling so consistently, it's Fernando Alonso. Because it doesn't matter, top team, bottom team, wherever he's been, Fernando's always ragged the neck out of any car that he's been given. Hmm. And I just think that if there is any hope, and again, it's on Aston Martin, but we know that they do, you know, with Dan Fallows and all of this experience that and all these people they've brought in, they are potentially the closest to Red Bull's philosophy. I just feel like if they can, if anyone can, it's Aston Martin. Mm-hmm. But are we asking?
But the fact that we're even talking about Aston Martin,
because it's not just Aston Martin; it's Aston Martin with Fernando Alonso.
Yeah, no. But the fact that we're even talking about, you know, Aston Martin, if we were going to look at them where they were last year, right? The fact we're even talking about, like, you know, Fernando Alonso comfortably getting a P3 this season is mad. And to then even go even further than that to be like, okay, he could close the bridge to Red Bull. I don't doubt Aston Martin's ability. I just don't think that's going to be 20 seconds worth. Like, they're going to find an upgrade to fix that.
It's about 0.5%, isn't it? Red Bull ahead, which doesn't sound like a lot, but when you magnify that over a 50.
Yeah, but I just think because it's not upgrades you can really do with like the engine and such. It's more kind of like the actual aerodynamics.
Oh, yeah, it's aware. Yeah.
But I don't think you're then going to find something which is going to bridge that over a one lap pace.
But I'm just like, it just takes what? Fernando's about 30 points behind Checo right now, who's about, you know, 14 behind Max. It's a couple of DNFs. Mm-hmm. I'm not being funny. Like, if Fernando can keep plugging in, I mean, he almost got P3 in Baku, didn't he? Because he was only within a second of Charles.
Yeah.
It could have been 5 P3s in a row.
Yeah.
Like, I just think that I've been so impressed with the way that Fernando's just jumped in and just seemingly pushed this team, like helped take this team and push it forward. Because, you know, Lance is not a bad driver, but Lance hasn't been delivering anywhere near the performances that Fernando has, which I don't think is a surprise to anyone.
It's weird. It's like, I should injure his wrist again, because I feel like he was better at the start when now he's fully fit.
Maybe.
But also, we've got to remember, this is us seeing Lance Stroll
very Garrett
in his
behavior,
fully dedicated...
Don't say that, we'll get him on pitch side.
This season is when we're meant to be seeing Lance Stroll at his fully dedicated most, because he's written into his own contract with Aston Martin to not do media, to be fully focused on...
Has he?
Mm-hmm.
So wait, say it again. So Lance's...
Yeah, so that's why he's not doing much media stuff outside of, like... That's why you always see Fernando Alonso doing all the TikToks and stuff like that. It's because Lance Stroll doesn't want to do all the media extra bits.
Oh,
that's why you're not seeing him across socials or doing most stuff with, like, with F1.
But do we know why his...
Yeah, it's because he's focusing on his season to be as good as he can be, because he thought it might be a bit of a distraction or something. And this is us trying to see him at his best, and it's clearly just not good enough. And I mean, we've always thought that anyway, but then that's the reason why it always goes back to him from, like, oh, he's from a rich family, that's how he's going into the sport, and it's a whole conversation around that. But ultimately, yeah, that's where it breaks down to. So when do you think we're going to actually start to see then this change with the teams of, like, you know, the wind tunnel sort of upgrades? When do you think we're going to actually start to actually see that drop off?
I feel like genuinely you're not going to see, like, the actual full effects of it till like 2/3 of the way into the season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because by the time the development's happened and by the time you've actually slapped it on the car, you've produced it, I feel like you're not going to see the results until that sort of time in the season.
It also depends on how efficient you are with that time. Because if you're a team that, you know, typically, you know, Aston Martin, typically, you know, when they were Racing Point, when they were Force India, they got the most out of, you know, very little resources, and you can probably expect the same with a better, you know, lineup in terms of like their engineers and, you know, the current infrastructure they have in place and the infrastructure that's also coming. But, you know, Red Bull have, they've proved that, you know, they could extend a gap even, you know, even having the limited testing restrictions already, not the limitations they have now from the penalty, but just from finishing first in the constructors, they still managed to pull away. So clearly they're the most efficient team with that time. How you know, can we expect that, you know?
Yeah, just because you spend more time on something doesn't mean it's going to be better.
Exactly.
Than and that kind
Yeah, you look at other teams that you got McLaren, who
prime example, McLaren.
Who have got all the resources you can think of. They've got a brilliant facility, and it's just like it's just been the wrong people to design the car, effectively. That's what it is. Because you've got everything they need there.
They've got two of the most exciting drivers.
Yeah,
like if Piastri lives up to
who are probably the most adaptable, because you've got Lando Norris, who has only ever driven a McLaren F1 car, so that's all he knows of. You've got a brand new Oscar Piastri, who is trying to adapt his driving style to being an F1 car. Again, that's the only one he's properly really driven. I know he's done some stuff with the Alpines, but that's the one he's done at pure racing pace. And so you've got two drivers there who can really help adapt to it. And obviously Lando's just trying to lead a bit more for like how the car's feeling in terms of progressing it forwards. But when you've got all that infrastructure there for kind of a new team, you're then needing the backup of like your engineers and your aerodynamicists and whomever it might be to put it in the right direction. Unfortunately, it's failed. Same with like Mercedes. That's where they've gone for a different like look and style of how they think the car's going to work, and it's not playing in their favour.
Both teams have made changes. Obviously, you've got Alisson coming in now at Mercedes to kind of take back his old role that he had. And then... Stella's come in and not the goalie, the Liverpool goalkeeper. And you've got it.
I said it so quietly.
I
didn't know if you'd be. I was just like, oh, maybe.
That's a football one.
Yeah, it's a football one.
Well done, man. You're learning.
I'm learning.
But then obviously McLaren with Stella and Sanchez coming in and all that restructuring. So I guess at least both, because I would say those two teams, Ferrari are kind of used to them disappointing a bit, but also at least they can put it on pole. You know, at least they've got pace somewhere.
Yeah.
I just
like, track dependent, isn't it? It's up with them.
I mean, only on Saturdays. They don't turn up on a Sunday.
Maybe they should have come together as McLaren. They should have just pooled resources, just McLaren, Mercedes. Bring them together.
Yeah. One like
back
team,
in the day, just make one team.
No, Scuderia and McLaren. Scuderia.
Well, technically, they've already done a transfer, because that's what happened in Formula E. McLaren brought the Mercedes team because Mercedes were pulling out, and so they just brought all the employees and all the resources and just moved factories. Literally just crossed over in Milton Keynes, basically. So
true.
Yeah. That's it.
God, they couldn't even get out of Milton Keynes. That's sad, man.
What do we make of...
Once you're there, you can't leave.
Because it's all roundabouts, just go around.
Yeah.
What do we make of... what do we make of Piastri so far, actually? Because there was so much talk of Piastri coming into this year because of all of the leaving Alpine drama. And I don't know, I feel like so many races now... Apparently Piastri had brake issues. This race, Lando got hit at the back as well. We don't know if maybe that curtailed his performance somewhat. We've had, two races outside of that where both cars have had issues. Mm-hmm. Well, the first two races of the season, we didn't really get to see their performance. Even Baku, Lando was on the wrong tyre in the sprint and then he was stuck in a train in the race.
Yeah.
And Piastri was ill.
Piastri was in the same train, just like further back.
Like,
he apparently had like only 4 slices of toast that weekend because he had so much food poisoning.
Yeah,
he was dry toast as well.
Yeah,
like
no butter.
It's not been
Weetabix.
Weetabix with butter.
It's not been the easiest start for Oscar, is it? Let's just put it like that.
And I think also we got to remember as well, he's like, also with like De Vries as well, we do need to remember like they are still rookies. Like we need to give him a bit of like, okay, have a season to adapt to it a little bit. We're almost giving them so much criticism as if they've been racing for years, as it were. And I know they've been competitive in F2 and other series, but at the same time for Oscar, it's a new team. And he's just trying to work out, you know, how to get maximized from this car, and also figuring out what it's a different style of racing, of course, from an F2 to an F1.
Yeah.
And they've obviously done some stuff with Alpine, but when you're racing it competitively compared to just doing a tire test or what have you, it's completely different. From personally, I think he's actually been doing quite a good job in comparison to Lando, but I can't tell if if we were to look at the comparison when it was back with Ricciardo, if that was, you know, Lando just really maximizing the package and Daniel just having a real struggle with the braking, or if this season now, and it's more on the how the car has been worked from McLaren, if both of them are now struggling. Because openly, yeah, I'll admit that saying that, like, obviously Lando's always going to have the advantage because he's been there, so you know, the car he's ever driven, an F1. But then with Oscar, because you're young, you can adapt to cars a lot more easier as opposed to, say, like a senior coming in.
Well, he has done his whole career because he's won everything. Like, exactly. when he's gone from F3 to F2, he's won F2. When he's gone, you know, so he is an adaptable driver. He's able to just get in a car. It's got more power and go, okay, I'm sick in this as well.
Yeah.
So the fact, I agree. I think he's done relatively well. I know today, obviously, he's miles off, but might have had a problem. Mm. He said he had. But if you look at Jeddah, like, beat Lando in qualifying. Well, obviously, Lando kind of bottled it a little bit. But, like, just generally speaking, had a decent weekend there, had it not been for damage and stuff like that. And I think he's just been super unlucky.
Yeah.
Mad problems in Bahrain, mad problems in Jeddah. But overall, pace-wise, I haven't looked at him and gone, fuck, man, you're like, 10.
And we got to remember as well, when they both got into the points, I think he was P10 and Lando was P8.
Australia.
Yeah. Like, yes. That's where they he was close enough to capitalize on what happened in front of him. And the one time when McLaren were able to get the points, he was at least able to get the last one there.
The thing is, well, that is literally, I mean, they have scored points outside of that, right? Or have they not?
No, I don't think so.
Not recognizable.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I think also it's important to remember that you guys don't get, or the rookies nowadays don't get as much testing as they did back then, or back in the days of like, near, back, you know, like
it's
Lewis.
3 days now, isn't it? Wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Mate, like you, used five to, and nothing. Five, yeah. You used to get about 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, how are you supposed to understand, like, it's a completely different, you know, challenge and, you know, in and of itself. So those first couple of races, you're learning on the, as you do it, you know, you're learning through experience, not necessarily, I mean, like, you know, you're just doing laps around a track, and it's different. I mean, they probably do laps in the sim, but it's not the same. It's like,
more understanding your lines and car setup, basically, without the GPS.
Yeah. Really. Mm-hmm. Do we think any part of Oscar, because look, we've had 5 races this year, he chose McLaren over at least a year at Williams and then potentially onto Alpine from there. Yeah. And right now, could say the Williams is just as quick as the McLaren, if not quicker. I think McLaren, you know, their position in the constructors spoils them. I think they've been a worse car than a lot of cars around them. I think that they've not impressed me as much as, you know, I don't think they merit being P6 and the points they've got. Do we think Oscar feels any, especially with all these changes going on in the background, obviously Key's out as well. I don't know. I know Alpine are perennial kind of underachievers, I feel like, but is it just a sidestep? Kind of Ricciardo made that sidestep to McLaren, it didn't work. I feel like Ricciardo should have definitely stayed at Renault. Mm-hmm. Like he could have really built that team around.
100%.
That's the big stinker move for me, not even leaving Red Bull. Like, it's leaving Renault because he had something there.
No, I agree.
Like Piastri now, I don't know. I know it's 5 races in, but
I honestly reckon no for that. Just because if I was to have the choice between McLaren or Williams, I would always go to McLaren. Just because, although both teams have a huge heritage there and a good kind of infrastructure, I would always rank McLaren over because they've
They're not backing it up though.
Yeah, but they've had the more recent success, whereas Williams haven't.
They have, but also they're on the downturn.
I think if, you know, hindsight is always 2020, right? So if you look at, there was a lot of promise, especially after 21 when they had their first win and then kind of fell off not fell off necessarily, but, you know, they weren't as good as they were, you know, at their peak in 2021.
Who got that win in 2021 from McLaren?
I think it was like,
wasn't it the year Pierre Gasly won?
It was Raniel.
Lando Ricciardo.
Someone just got paid off like 80 million something from McLaren.
Maybe that's the reason why McLaren not doing that well. It's my boy. He's ruined it for everyone.
He did what Ricciardo did to Lotus. Raikkonen did to Lotus.
Yeah.
And when he kept winning, it was like, oh, please stop. We can't afford. They still owe Raikkonen money, you know.
He's piled them off, apparently.
Technically
they still do, but he's...
Which is now Renault, isn't it?
Yeah. Sorry, what was the story behind that?
So it was Raikkonen got
For every point?
For every point he got...
Okay, I'm going to stop you there. That's the worst contract clause I've ever heard.
That's a big deal. That's so like the type of thing you do when you're like drunk in a pub or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Like
because it was every like point almost, you get the back of a coaster.
So yeah, obviously, fairly brand new team, and they just wanted a big star driver to come on board.
Right, yeah.
And they were like, we can't really promise that you're going to get like good results. So every point that you do get... then we're going to give you like, well, I can't remember what the figure of four it was now, like 100,000 or something, something stupid like that.
You carry on talking, I'll find.
But then effectively, then obviously Raikkonen jumps into the Lotus. I think
it's
that's
actually not bad, isn't it? Because when did he join? Was it 2012?
2011.
And yeah, obviously just drove the ass off the car and got like multiple podiums, a few wins, I think as well. I think that's the same year with, was that the same year with Grosjean?
Yeah. Grosjean actually, I think, he went back to GP2 in 2011. And then came back in 2012.
Grosjean, they got one podium together, but I think it might be later.
Grosjean's crashing season was 2012, and then he actually like slapped it in 2013.
Yeah, so basically then Raikkonen just performed the hell out of Lotus.
Yeah.
Really put them onto the mark of it. It reminded me of a bit when Haas first came back into the sport. I think Tom has got the stats now.
So this is 2012.
Ah, wonderful.
Raikkonen scored 390 points. And he was promised to be paid 50,000 euros per point, which is 19.5 million.
Oh my
written
God.
Written into his contract.
Oh my God.
Bag secured.
It reminds me of like the Nike deal with Jordans. Was it Jordans? Where like.
Michael Jordan.
Yeah. Was it with that? I think it was that deal where they to get him to sign the deal, they're basically saying like the Air Force or whatever, the first shoe they made, he gave like, okay, well, every shoe you get a certain percentage. And obviously then it was the biggest shoe that Nike done. And then obviously that's how he's made his millions and stuff.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Dodgy contracts galore.
But then obviously he could have obviously got taken into court to be all that lot. So I think he's now parred it off.
Yeah, he's he's got enough money.
They gave him the actual race car for whatever it is, and then like he deserves to do stuff. Does whatever.
I don't know. I feel like maybe it is too soon. Alpine, you know, they look good this weekend in Miami. They were shocking last weekend, and I don't know. I just feel like. Maybe we'll see with Piastri. We still haven't seen enough. Still haven't seen enough from him and him or Lando. I haven't really been able to prove that much. But I think another driver, obviously, you mentioned him earlier, Matt. Nyck de Vries did out-qualify Yuki this.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Weekend. But still finished well off at the back. Quite a sizable, more than 10 seconds, definitely, to Yuki in the end.
He was, what, 18th, wasn't he?
Yeah. Mm. What do we make of, because like you said, and you know, because Mr. Formula E, obviously you know the good work he did in FE. We were talking before. Well, that's the thing, because he did win a Formula E championship, he did win an F2 championship, but...
Well, he won it. He didn't. Yeah,
he did win it, but
he won.
He was very fortunate.
Yeah, he was very. It's pretty much like, oh, we're gonna have a race and someone trips over. Oh, I've still won it, but someone's fallen. Yeah, it was basically handed to him because someone's car broke down. Basically.
Well, Mitch Evans just didn't start, and then F2 wasn't. You were going through the F2 grid. He was up against.
Oh, lads, no, genuinely, guys, it's the worst Formula 2 grid you've ever seen in your life. I'm so sorry to anyone who was involved in that Formula 2 season. There were some good drivers in it, but they just didn't finish in anywhere near the top eight. Mick Schumacher, it was his
first
season.
Good drivers, right?
average drivers. There were some all right drivers in it. But yeah, I think he won the championship. The GOAT himself, Nicholas Latifi, was in fact P2. P3, I want to say, was... I literally read it out earlier and I've forgotten. Was it Sete Câmara? No, Giotto. Luca Giotto was third. I think he does sports car stuff now. Sete Câmara, fourth.
Yeah.
Jack Aitken was fifth. And then Nobuhara Matsushita was sixth. Yeah. So anyone outside the top two never graduated. Wow. Or never really got anywhere near graduating.
Well, look at the pedigree of those drivers relative to other F2
seasons. Not a single one of those got actually ever like seriously linked to an F1 seat.
No.
At all.
Yeah.
Yeah. One got an FE seat and then... Yeah, the Jack Aitken has done a lot of stuff with WEC.
Yeah, he does sports car stuff as well.
Then
I just like for Red Bull to sign De Vries. Obviously, you had that one amazing result that he had in the Williams, but that was a track that was so suited. You said this earlier, Ben. Hindsight is a beautiful thing, but yeah, I said pre-season I was like, Yuki's not going to get beaten by De Vries.
No,
I believe in Yuki. Like he's got this raw
Yuki's
pace,
superiority.
This raw diamond is there.
He's got that dog in him,
and Yuki. He's done a job on him. Yeah, it's a small dog. Packs a punch. You know, Min's a small dog, but you know he bites hard. And you know, I just think that do we see, because Red Bull have been known to make these brutal changes mid-season. If we get halfway in, which they did with Gasly when they took Gasly out of the Red Bull and put Alex in, with Kvyat it was what, four races when they took him out for Verstappen. If things don't improve, I think he's definitely going to lose that seat.
It's in their nature to do so. I mean, you know, like, as you said, like Gasly and Albon, and it was kind of like the perfect storm almost, you know. You know, with the F2 grid not being as strong as it is, that kind of elevated status. And then obviously the Monza thing, you got basically flattered by Latifi. And then obviously, you know, the Williams being really strong in Monza in general. So, Yeah, it's difficult to say because the other thing is the age. Like, you know, he's been racing cars in general for a lot longer than, you know,
he's the likes 3 years Sergeant older than Charles
Piastri. Mm. Yeah, exactly. He's older than Max, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, like.
But who would. This is my thing, right? So, with Nick De Vries, like, I've got my own opinions with him. Then that's just through personal stuff with, like, when he was doing stuff at FE. I didn't really rate him then. He was consistent, which is good, but then everyone... And then, yes, he did win the Formula E championship, but then he also did the following championship and he was shit in it.
It's eighth, I think, the year after.
Yeah, and that was against Stoffel van Dorn, who was his teammate at the time.
Yeah.
Bring back Stoff, man.
Yeah. Actually, no, definitely not.
no. Shade.
Alex Jakes wouldn't agree with you on that.
Yeah.
Well, if he was good enough, he would still be there.
Mass.
Carry on.
This is fun.
Basically, this is the thing, right? So we also remember, like,
I mean, you're digging.
Yeah.
Why have I got the lead? Oh, I'm going to lose my F1 drive. I'm fine. Shit, I'm fine.
He hasn't got
true.
Like, we're here to like not fall asleep. We're trying to like make good opinions with it. And I think the main thing with this is like it's like. Red Bull don't have the same ownership over AlphaTauri anymore. Like, they don't. Otherwise, because before it used to be Red Bull, Toro Rosso, proper, like, linking ships there. And they do have some form of brother-sister kind of connection, but I don't think what it was compared to, like, you know, back when it was Kvyat and when it was, you know, Max Verstappen's first starting.
Why not Verstappen and Sainz?
When they definitely had more connection there.
Why not?
Well, you just see it, because it's all they have some linking branding and stuff. I just don't think, who have you got them waiting?
Red Bull own that team.
Yeah, no, I know, but I'm like, but we haven't seen that fully come into effect of moving the drivers around and shaping it up, because that's what they would happen like back when it was Kvyat and what have you. And also, who would be the one in the to replace that? And I know we mentioned during the live stream we did earlier that there was potential for Daniel Ricciardo there. But again, I don't understand why that would be done midway through the season, especially when it's Nick De Vries' first sort of time with the team. I don't think that's fair, really that fair.
The one thing I will say is, whilst Red Bull probably don't have that same control over AlphaTauri as they did, say, like 5-10 years ago, they do still definitely have some. They slap Yuki Tsunoda in there.
Yeah.
But they own the team.
They do own the team.
So they have full control.
If they had full control, I don't think Nick De Vries would be in the car. I'm not going to lie. But there's bare Red Bull juniors that they could have. And that is also a limiting factor, I think, for Nick, because he doesn't have any sort of connection. He's not going to go anywhere after AlphaTauri. And they've got Liam Lawson. someone like that who's just sat there doing Super Formula could go, yeah, right, Liam, now's your time, bro. We don't really care about Super Formula, to be honest, boss. So boom, in you go.
Yeah.
That is the one thing that I would be concerned for Nick.
Yeah.
It is his debut season. I would be surprised if he got done out halfway through it.
I think
if he keeps finishing 18th, they might as well take a punt on someone that's actually Red Bull Junior.
Yeah.
That's not even doing F2, and you're not even going to hurt their F2 championship like Iwasa.
Yeah.
So.
Do you think you'd if you were to apply that then to like Logan Sargeant, who has also been making mistakes as well with Williams, do you think Williams would do something like that at all?
But I think his pace has been a lot better.
Logan's 21. That is his actual rookie season. Like, he's just come out of F2.
He has made a lot of mistakes, to be fair, Logan. He's been there a few times.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
But I think, honestly, his actual pace compared to Albon, again, he had problems today. His pace compared to Albon has genuinely not been like that catastrophic in comparison to De Vries.
No, he outqualified Alex in Jeddah if it wasn't for crossing that white line.
He was up there in Baku too. Yeah. Up until, obviously,
absolutely.
That, you know, not through the wall.
Look, Nick outqualified Yuki this weekend.
Yeah, true.
It's not all been stinky. I just think, like, I don't understand. Like,
well, he told us not to call him a rookie. So we can't even... He was like, I don't want to be treated as a rookie. So we can't even compare him really to Logan Sargeant. We've got to compare him to other people that have been here for time.
Fair.
Because he's 28. Well, is he 28?
Yeah, he's 28, yeah.
He's not finished.
I think, especially with these, like, the younger guys, especially Sargeant, I actually have a friend who's doing a placement here on at Williams. Mm-hmm. And he normally talks about, well, as a performance engineer, and he talks about how, you know, Logan's, like, he's eager to do well, but he's almost, like, you know, the way we're saying, like, with Charles, he's kind of, like, trying too much to prove himself.
Mm.
And I think that element is, you know, especially in rookies, is quite prevalent, especially if you don't have as much experience. You know, you don't have that foresight to think like, oh, I'd rather leave, you know, this much on the table than actually finish a lap.
Yeah.
You know, and it was weird how also, you know, this is a side note, how the wheel, you know, when you just tap the barrier in Baku, how it just like completely detached from the rim, which was like, yeah, I just thought it was kind of interesting. Same with Sonoda.
Yeah.
It happens like quite frequently. And Magnussen as well in Australia. It's becoming a recurring theme.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think if I'm in charge at Red Bull, look, my theory around De Vries in the first place was that the only way that made sense to me going for De Vries and not taking a punt on like a young Red Bull junior, which there have been a lot, there's not been a standout massive performer. I think, you know, Lawson was behind. No,
Lawson
just ahead of Sargeant in F2 last year.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, he got him right at the end.
Yeah.
By like a point or two.
Mm.
There wasn't this real big standout, like obvious, right, this is the next young kid to go for. Maybe we'll see that this year. But the reason that De Vries, the only reason that made sense to me is that, okay, Red Bull were taking a punt on De Vries because they've got this vacant seat. Gasly's gone. And maybe this could be the next guy to, you know, say Perez isn't doing well relative to Max, or say Perez is fighting too much. Maybe this could be the next guy to be a nice number two, comfortable number two. Because if you're fighting for championships, you want a one and two. You can't have two number one drivers.
Mm-hmm.
So having someone like, and Nick's got a good relationship with Max, blah, blah, blah. From what we've seen in 5 races, he's not that guy. I don't know. I've not seen enough.
No, trust me, you're not that guy.
maybe with a bit more time, he might be. But I think once we get to mid-season, yeah, if the trajectory starts to improve, cool. If it doesn't, then you've got Lawson. I think Lawson makes a lot of sense from Red Bull's point of view, because this is a young driver, the young Kiwi's shown loads of potential, did bits in DTM, beat Alex in DTM.
Versatile, to be fair.
Well in F2, running well in Super Formula at the minute as well. That's like the next closest thing to F1. Ricciardo is an interesting one because I don't think Red Bull set to gain. Red Bull maybe gain something from that because they see Ricciardo in a car racing, like relative to Sonoda in a very scrappy midfield at the minute.
Mm.
And maybe that. I think from Daniel's point of view, if Daniel wants to guarantee a seat next year, I think getting a AlphaTauri seat for the second half of the season will help him. In my opinion, because because if I'm like a, I don't know, what's it, if I'm a Lawrence Stroll, I don't know, and I look at Ricciardo, he likes high profile names. They don't come much more high profile than Ricciardo. I want to know I'm getting a Red Bull or Renault Ricciardo, but there's always that. Oh, am I going to get the McLaren Ricciardo?
Yeah,
you know, there is there is, unfortunately, now on Ricardo's report card, he can't get rid of those, you know, 2 years, even though he got a win.
Yeah.
Like, overall, those seasons were poor by his standards. Mm. So how does he guarantee himself a good seat?
Yeah, and I think that really just depends on where, how Red Bull season's going to go. Like, obviously, there's a whole conspiracy that potentially, like, oh, if Perez is still not chummy with Verstappen, he's going to cause him more grief with the championship battle. Like, potentially, oh, the, like, crystal ball looking at it, it's like, oh, maybe he can be, like, looking at, look, take over from Perez kind of thing, which obviously in my eyes, I would love that. But it's, like, it's all about, like, what Ricardo's basically wanting to do as well. Like, he's, obviously, any team that he goes to now is not going to be on financial benefits, so he's going to have to probably have a massive reduction in what his original race fee was going to be, because he obviously can't ask for the same amount.
Can't merit that wage anymore.
And obviously, Red Bull currently developing him a lot to get back to his original driving style, which he's kind of had train out from him, from McLaren, from having those struggles. But then if he was then going to go to somewhere like AlphaTauri, for example, which is, yeah, not UK-based, and it's a different team, different setup, entirely to Red Bull.
But he did used to be at Toro Rosso.
Yeah, but quite a few years ago now.
That's where it started from.
True.
I don't know. I could
bring
that. Oh, yeah, true.
Yeah, you're right.
It was online.
Yeah.
Knowledge. Knowledge, Niren. It's not just a pretty face.
We all knowledge. They're in there somewhere.
Also, Ben, while we got you on, we talked about this a bit on the live stream, but I know you're a big Charles Leclerc fan because he retweeted you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the, so like I put like a little trailer at the start and you like, he somehow saw it and he just like, yeah, shared it. And then again, I'd like on the day when I actually uploaded, he shared the link and then, well, I put the link in the tweet and then I think he probably remembered, but I feel like it wasn't him. I still have like this suspicion that someone else was running his account.
No,
it was him. It was him.
It was definitely
saw that.
We can confirm. Obviously, Charles didn't have a great time on Friday or Saturday.
Yeah.
And in the race, I mean, he was, where was he in the end?
Did he finish seventh?
Between Sainz and Hamilton?
Behind Lewis.
Yeah, he finished behind Lewis. Yeah. He got overtaken.
He's six.
Yeah.
He's seven.
He's seven.
Yeah.
Sorry, maths is hard.
We were talking about this in terms of Charles 100%, maybe slightly over the line, maybe too often driving style. If you're Fred Vasseur, are you saying anything to Charles? Are you trying to dial him back or are you just letting him? Because you know Charles on his day has the, you know, ability to, over a lap, arguably be quicker than anyone on the grid.
Yes. And I think, you know, his breakout season was 2019. Coming in, you know, alongside Vettel and, you know, taking it with him toe-to-toe. Obviously, like, you know, some Vettel fans will say that, you know, Vettel was better over the course of the season. But, you know, if we look at it, I guess, holistically, you know, the two main races where, I guess, he took the mantle of, you know, the lead driver in Ferrari were Monza and, Spa. And obviously, the Monza was the big one. You know, having Ferrari hadn't won a race in Monza since 2010. With Fernando Alonso, which was, you know, like, was huge.
That's when he did that naughty squeeze on
the Lynch, naughty squeeze, he? I mean, but like, I pretend I don't see. But
I prefer not to speak.
But like, and then in 2020 again, they had they didn't have the best car. You know, they obviously, like, it was the illegal engine talk at the time.
Yeah,
and, but you know that he's proved himself in a car that's not necessarily the best. You know, some things he did in 2020 were, like, you know, ridiculous. You'd see, like, you know, obviously Lewis, Bottas, Verstappen, and then you kind of see Leclerc, and, like, especially, like, Portimao was one of them, where, you know, he had really good tyre management. And, you know, I think he's evolved as a driver.
Well, I mean, even 2018, Sauber, I think pretty sure he ended the season with three P7s.
Yeah.
So three best of the rest in a Sauber.
Yeah. In a Sauber. Like, he was already, you know, coming into his own. And I think, you know, 2021 was, again, like, you know, kind of a bit of a transitional year. They were focused more on 2022. But I don't know. Like, it's more of a, I hate, you know, shifting the blame, because I do like holding people accountable when they're, you know, to blame for something. You know, like, yesterday was obviously 100% his fault. But, you know, the pressure that is on him, you know, from not just, you know, within Ferrari, but you know, from the media and like, you know, the fans, tifosi, the tifosi themselves, like they look up to him and they're like, you know, they expect him to do all to basically, you know, carry them into the kind of the next era. But you know, when you have you know, Red Bull who are doing so well, I think it's difficult to say how well he would have done had he not had those issues, you know, like, you know, the strategical errors they had.
He wouldn't have won the championship.
Obviously, he wouldn't have won the championship
without his own mistakes.
It would have been closer.
I think all the drivers do have the same pressure, because you can apply, I know you're speaking of like the tifosi there, but you can also have the same with like, you know, Lewis Hamilton and who he wants to represent. You got Alex Albon wants him to represent, you know, his country where it hasn't been racing there. You do have, every driver's got that thing, and I don't think that's the only biting point for it. And I don't think that's when he's trying to do his best in qualifying and pushing too much that he's thinking, I need to prove myself for the tifosi. I don't think that's the case, because I think every driver has that same amount of pressure. I think what's happening is that he's just going too far with it. And that's what all the circumstances we've ever seen it is, where he's either braked a bit too much, like going into Baku with a classic meme for that, or, you know, going over the curb because he's trying to, because he's just trying to find these little things of like those little edges to get past it. And it's all those little mistakes where it's him just going over the mark and not, I don't think it's pressure, because I don't, apart from France, where he was already, when he was leading and then went out on his own accord, maybe that was down to it. But with these other examples, I think it's where he is just pushing a bit too much for it. Because he knows the car isn't that good. He's comfortable knowing that he is the number one driver in that car. That's kind of a given. You can just watch it, see any sort of race weekend. But I think here, this is where he's been knocked off his confidence in practice and qualifying. And we've seen that reflected in the race, where he was clearly a lot slower than Sainz was, because he didn't want to risk it too much. Because if he was to crash in this race, then he would just feel embarrassed for
the whole weekend of pain, isn't it? Even the battles with K-Mag, I was sort of like,
he was just trying to keep it clean,
but he was getting peppered.
Yeah.
Because you'd make an overtake and K-Mag was like, no.
Do you think there's a bit of a tendency to nitpick, though? To look at certain, you know, incidents, because let's not forget, Miami was everyone was having different. It's only that Leclerc's was the most spectacular. It was like the biggest, but there were people going off at, you know, Checo clipped the wall, I think, going into, turn four, just like on entry. He didn't, you know, obviously he ended up being able to get away from that, but Leclerc didn't. Obviously, you know, he pushed that little bit too far.
I think Charles Leclerc's, I think Charles Leclerc's accidents are spectacular.
They are, yeah.
Every time.
They're big.
As soon as there's a mistake, like, he does not go half measures.
Yeah.
He fucks it. Like, he slaps it in the barrier. So, like, we see backs make mistakes every now and again, you know.
But it's
very rarely, obviously, you know, he spun up Hungary last year just randomly for no reason. Like, the Jeddah qualifying lap and stuff. So, like, everyone does make mistakes. Everyone, like, will fuck up at some point. I just think Charles are... spectacular.
It's the outcome that's remembered.
And the outcome...
Yeah, and it's also like...
It feels like he's bottling it a little bit.
And it also depends on the session, because like obviously in the free practice sessions, that's where you are trying to push the limit to find what that limit is. And if you go a bit too far over, cool, I know now I need to rein it back in a little bit.
Yeah.
But with Leclerc's one, it's always at the worst possible moments, whether it's a qualifying or the race. If you spin it during the practice session, what have you, that's fine. Because then, you got your other tyres you can go on to, you keep running them down. But with Leclerc's one, it's very much like, all right, I'm fully going into the barriers here, or I'm carrying on with my race.
Yeah, it's even like Monaco, like he lost a pole and probably guaranteed win because of a mistake.
Yeah.
Because he pushed it too much, yeah.
Paul Ricard, he was probably going to lose the lead, but lost second. Imola lost like crazy amounts of points.
So I heard Charles was talking after qualifying, and he was saying that, you know, there was a degree of acceptance on his side. It's like, I am the driver who can get, you know, pole positions ahead of Red Bulls, looking at where they are right now. But sometimes this is the byproduct of that. But he, you know, puts his hand up, takes responsibility for it. I'm just trying to remember, last season, first half of the year, that Ferrari was on pace with the Red Bull. And there were some quality battles between him and Max. Imola, I remember that one. Obviously, he was having to pick his way back through the field. So he was pushing 100%. Like, and then pushed 101% and spun. And then France, even France, you know, I don't think he would have won that race.
He knew he had to drive at 100% every single lap to have any chance of winning.
Yeah.
I think if you give Charles a car that doesn't necessitate him to drive 100% every single lap, because I think as long as he's not got a championship fighting car, that's just who he is. He will drive at 100%.
Yeah.
And he will often overstep. Yeah. If you give him a car like, you know, Max has got right now or Lewis had for years, he doesn't need to drive at 100%. And then I think you get an incredible driver. Yeah. I just think when he's playing catch up, he plays catch up at 100%, and sometimes he's going to overstep.
And that's
that.
Where you look at like the Red Bull drivers, where I don't think Max Verstappen is driving at 100% the entire time.
He doesn't need to.
Yeah, because no, he doesn't need to, because the car's working underneath him. So like you got Sergio Perez, who'd be like, I don't know, let's say driving 85% of it, like as much as he could do, and then you got Max who's doing it at 95%. And if you're constantly driving at 100%, then your percentage of crashing or making incidents or whatever it's going to go so high, because
there's no
you're
tolerance.
Really pushing it. Yeah, totally. Yeah, absolutely. And that's the one bit where we do see when it works really well, where drivers are really praised and such for it. We've seen it with Hamilton many times before, when he's done incredible race craft and such, where it's like... I can't remember which race it was, but it's like, you know, even when you're driving in the wet or anything, if you make one little like mistake, that's your race completely gone. You've got to be super hyper-focused into it. But I think, yeah, with Leclerc, it's like, it basically determines if this is going to happen any more times in the next three races. Like these next three races.
Yeah, it will.
Yeah, but it's the thing. Like, it's like, yeah.
No faith.
It's happen again. Like, if he crashes in the next three races, this is going to be one of a huge... And I know we were kind of talking a bit earlier about it, because it's happened twice in Miami during practice and quali. But if he crashes in the next three races, it's going to really start to affect him.
Yeah,
totally.
Like, if he crashes out in a race again...
Not for budget reasons or anything, but it's more like, it's like, right, you keep pushing it too much now, you need
you're to... You're going to just have to rein it back
you're going to need to rein it in, but then what's happened here, he's reined it in at Miami, and because of that, he's got a pretty crappy result.
If you think about 2018 Verstappen as well, I think we'll have the same conversations pretty much. Mm-hmm. You know, a little bit too overambitious, you know, trying too much, trying too hard, and, you know, crashed in. I think the last draw for Verstappen was probably Monaco, because from that point, like, and then there was obviously Canada, and he said, like, the whole headbutt thing. But from that point on, he was, like, ridiculous. Like, I mean, he only had ever had, you know, I can't remember how his 2018 post-Canada went, but I just remember him being, like, on the podium way more consistently. Mm. And he tamed that you know, aggression and that, you know, basically that, you know, want and desire to basically, I want to get, you know, where I want to go now. You know, I want to... you know, basically pushing 110%, as you know, what we've been saying with the clan. So, you know, I think Christian Horner at the start of 2022 said something that was like, I think quite, you know, accurate in this case. I'd rather make a fast car reliable than a slow car, than an unreliable car. I'd rather make... I'd rather make, you know,
unreliable,
have a driver
car
who's...
fast.
Exactly. Yeah, I'd rather have a driver who has that natural talent and natural ability.
Charles got the ingredients.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure. I think all of the greats, you know, you look through the, Schumacher, Senna,
yes,
Hamilton, whoever, like, all of these greats have that uncompromising, you know, I just think, I think if the circumstances are right for Charles, I think... he can deliver. Mm-hmm. I just think he's not great in a car that's like Gunther wouldn't like Charles.
That's why it wouldn't have gone well if he'd actually gone to Haas.
Yeah,
see the testing for them and stuff. So that would have been, goodness gracious.
Yeah, that would have been a shocker. One other thing I did want to ask, actually, I was thinking of asking this during the stream, and I was like, no, I think this deserves a bit more time, because we look at the current field of 20 drivers in F1, and, you know, I don't think we'll ever have the 20 best drivers, because there's always going to be a degree of money in the way, right?
Yeah.
But I think the driver is less important than ever in F1, because I think the standards are so high. I think if you put any combination of the top six drivers in F1 into that Red Bull, I think whether it's that, say, George and Charles, or whether it's Lewis and Checo or whoever, into that Red Bull, I still think the Red Bull is clear. Because I just think...
Oh, yeah, massively. I honestly, you could extend that to like the top 12.
Yeah, and that's not always been the case. Because I think sometimes when there's been, even like, you know, early, mid-2000s, the quality gap, I think, was quite big between drivers. So you could have a driver compensate and do bits. I think now it's all about the car than the driver, because I just think all the drivers are so good now.
We need the Stig back. This is what we need. Get him to drive every F1 team's car to actually see what's...
Everyone go back on Top Gear for that.
Like, yeah.
But do you think that's... Do you think that rings true?
I fully 100% agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's more like... Yeah, it's just the team's resources compared, like, the factory of, like, Red Bull to Haas. You know, it's completely different of in terms of, like, what they can bring to the table, and it's reflective. The drivers can be as great as they can be. You can have Max Verstappen driving the Haas round. It's still not going to be, like, in the top five. You can just...
Then again, that kind of... I mean, it's always been a thing in Formula One. I guess it's not as...
It's not really a meritocracy.
Yeah. The thing is, I guess you had bigger gaps, and you did, to be fair, have some shitter drivers in like the early 2000s and stuff. I think now, like, you look at even guys that are rocking around at the back of the grid, like De Vries has won like two FIA championships.
Yeah, exactly.
Sargent like almost won F3 and like did relatively well in F2 and stuff like that. He's just been like a karting world champion.
Yeah, yeah.
Like everyone's got a good CV now.
Yeah. That's what I mean.
Yeah, now we're nitpicking. I do hear that.
Like, but even if you're like a top best driver in the world, like the gap between you and the slowest driver in F1 is smaller than it's ever been.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's what I think. And obviously, that's why the cost cap's been brought in, to try and fix that. Because obviously, it's from the F1 standpoint, there is clear that it's an issue.
But also,
you don't want that, really. Yeah. Like for me, like I as the consumer, I don't really want to watch the sport and know the only thing that matters is the car that they drive, rather than actually how good they are. Because then that kind of alienates the whole idea of like, who's winning based... I mean, there's always going to be an element of it has to be the right team and the right car, right?
But it has
to be the best driver, surely. Like, yeah. It can't just be based on team do you drive.
Red Bull got the perfect pair, because they've got Red Bull.
Yeah, that is factually the best driver.
But even if you had, say, I don't know, Checo and Carlos in the Red Bull, like, even if you had, and then Max and Charles in a Ferrari, they would still be behind the Red Bull. I mean, it's 20 seconds today, like the gap between... And I just think it's not enough now for a top midfield team to have this unreal driver, like when Schumacher jumped in the Jordan.
Yeah.
You know, at Spa, like to compensate for that, because those gaps just aren't what they used to be. I think the quality is getting better throughout. It's good. I just think regulations, let's still be patient with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think next season is the one. I keep saying that.
Man, how long we've been saying that? How long we've been saying that? Next season.
Next season, lads. Tune in next season, yeah?
I'm kidding. Right, should we wrap it there?
That was yes, we shall indeed. Yeah.
I'm tired. It's just gone 11:30.
Yeah. In the morning.
Yes.
Also, the afternoon listeners as well.
Yeah. And the dusk and dawn listeners as well. Shout out you guys.
Absolutely. Ben, Matt, thank you very much for giving us your time. Ben, where can everyone find you?
You can find me BMPH on YouTube. I'll be uploading on there, and
that's it, man.
Yeah, chilling.
Like and subscribe.
If you've come to the end of this video, I want you to comment on YouTube the word pineapple, just that, and it will confuse everyone who comes onto the video. So if you come this far, write the word pineapple on
this man understands SEO.
Yeah, he does. Good stats as well.
How's pineapple on pizza for you lot?
It's not the one.
Really?
I can't do it.
I'm the only one then.
Sorry, mate, not for me.
Ben, you had to ruin it.
He's got the yellow.
We're just gonna bleep the entire thing. Where can we find you?
Niren, where else can they find us?
I'm so glad you asked. They can actually find us in a KFC popcorn chicken.
Oh, can they?
He's literally got a KFC over there. I ordered KFC. Great. It's been there the entire recording.
I'll bring the fourth wall there. Yeah, I ordered KFC halfway through.
Decent.
And I'm just looking around for random items basically I can find us on. Find us in the back of the Daily Telegraph.
They can find us on the 165th floor.
Oh, nice. That's good from you.
It's literally right there. I mean, up there.
That's audio only, though. That's audio only.
In Tom Garrett's humorous.
Oh, man. Didn't have to do him like that.
He's all right. He'll be fine. Big up, Tom. Thank you all for coming. Again, rate 5-star, comment, love, like, and we'll see you next week. Ciao, adios, we're done.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.